So why don't we talk about sort of the growth of the digital health sector in recent years?
Well, yeah, I think what you've seen since, I mean, certainly in the last 10, it's just blown up. But even from 2017 to 2018, we've seen venture more than double. I think we already have more venture investment and private equity investment in 2019 than we had in all of 2017. Now, 2018 was a really, big year as well, and I think M&A might be a little down so far this year, and it looks to be, and that's a lot. That has a lot to do with the slow start given the government shutdown early on in the year. But I would expect that M&A, so long as the macroeconomy continues, that the M&A is going to continue to grow year by year as more of these companies develop, and you see more, different buyers coming in and looking at these digital health companies for various reasons. So, as you can see from the chart, we're growing, and or the digital health field's growing, and it's we don't see any reason for it to slow down too much, setting aside macroeconomic factors.
So Ridwan, as an investment banker, if a later stage emerging growth company comes to you and says, hey, we think we're pre-IPO, we think we're thinking about an exit in the next couple of years, what are some of the talking points that you're having with those folks?
In terms of things that they need to think about?
Right.
I think it's there's a couple elements that sort of play into the comments that set this up. One is, are you positioning yourself as a technology company that happens to be in healthcare, or are you a healthcare first company? And it's, to some degree, it may not matter from a buyer's perspective, but it is important to have a point of view around that. It plays into the business model and sort of what you're trying to drive value off of. If you're selling subscription-based software, that case is a little bit cleaner and easier to make, because then you can make the point that it looks and feels like other software businesses. I think the point around, being prepared for the prospective diligence that's going to happen, whether it's some of these sort of regulatory elements, it's making sure that you've got a data set that can support what your model says. We've seen this happen a lot, where companies are saying we're going to grow at, an exponential rate, and parties, particularly private equity, who are financial engineers, come in and say, well, tell us what the buildup is for, bookings, all the sort of the layers that fill in to help us support why you're going to grow that way, and companies can't do it because they haven't been prepared or collating that data over the last couple of years. So those are sort of the couple key important things. The other thing I'd say is, depending on what your exit trajectory is, who and what do you think you're selling towards? Because that does change the positioning story. There is not one in-market strategic acquirer for healthcare technology businesses. It's not Cerner or Epic, which are the two biggest, basically doing what Cisco did in the 90s and buying up everything kind of within the space. In fact, what you see if you go back over the last couple of years is, a very bespoke set of strategic acquirers, and so that requires a different positioning story depending on who that is, and that plays into a little bit of the work that you do in preparing for an exit.
And what are some of the valuations that these companies have been getting of late, and where do you see it headed?
Yeah. So, it depends a bit on sort of stage of the company. Earlier stage companies, that are pre-profitability, revenue multiple construct is pretty common. And there we're seeing a drift towards, something that looks more like typical software, which will be high single digits revenue multiple. Now, the question is always with multiples, is multiple of what?
Right.
So, if you're selling subscription software, you have an annualized run rate, and you're growing fast, what you were growing at in the early part of the year, what your run rate was, is not where it is where you end the year. As a banker, we always try and get value for where you're finishing on that growth ramp. So that's an important consideration there. In terms of more middle market and more mature companies, EBITDA as a multiple construct is probably the most common. And even in the public markets, things like PE are not typically used for companies like this. It is an EBITDA multiple construct. If we were having this conversation 10 years ago, I would have said, typically if, healthcare IT businesses are trading comfortably at double digits. 3 years ago, I would have said 15 times. And right now, we're looking at M&A multiples above 20 times. And there has been a pretty meaningful step function. And the other interesting element to that is that's private equity who are paying strategic-like multiples
right.
for a lot of these businesses. So in the past, you would have said, you know, and that's where conventional wisdom is, strategic can always beat a private equity buyer because they've got synergies. There's, you know, other specific reasons for making that transaction that'll sort of put them at the top of the list. Here, one, because it's a more bespoke list of strategics, but two, because private equity has so much capital that they've got to put to work. And we've seen a handful of folks come to the till, you know, several times and pay, you know, very aggressive multiples,
right.
in many cases beating out strategic acquirers as a consequence. So we put some data together here on the table. You can see a lot of on the column all the way to the right in the left table there, you know, a lot of 20 plus numbers, which wouldn't have been the case a couple of years ago, which is, I think, you know, it's pretty clear private equity is underwriting probably to a different return threshold than they used to.
Right.
It may not be 20 plus percent IRR, maybe something like a 15 or you know, something in the teens type of construct.